Hello, the internet, and welcome to episode number 2 of Shutter Speed, the Microsoft Channel 10 digital photography and imaging show. Bit of a mouthful. Welcome to my guests on the show, Michael Palamidi, Bill Crow, and Jeff Green. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you. Thank
this is your first time on Shutter Speed.
Yes.
Tim Graves with us last time. Could you give us a just quick little interview of little overview of kind of what you do here at Microsoft?
Yeah, I work on the Rich Media Group team. Mm-hmm. I'm a new marketing manager there, mm-hmm. and we work with digital photographers in the pro and prosumer space.
Now, as a photographer, what do you like to take photos of?
My wife and I spent 25 years taking portraits and weddings, so we're done with that.
Okay.
But I like wildlife and nature, and I like 3D and pinhole photography, too. I like doing some of the stuff that's outside the box.
Great. So. All right, well, the purpose of the Shutter Speed show is to bring some of the experts here at Microsoft together and to help you, the photographer at home, take better photos by understanding how your hardware works. And once you've taken those photos, we're going to show you some really cool things you can do with them, which is whether it's editing them on the computer, whether it's printing them out. We'll try and show you tips and tricks to actually take better photos and do better things with them. So with that, let's start the first segment where we like to talk about some of the photography and imaging news items that have come up recently. The first news item is a recent episode of CSI, which was on CBS, mentioned or used a piece of Microsoft technology called Photosynth. Now, did you guys see this?
It was wonderful.
You all saw it?
Yeah.
I believe they're actually streaming the episode. I'll put a link up on the website, but it's like cbs.com/CSI, I think. You can see the full episode. Now, Photosynth is a piece of technology Microsoft's working on. It's not actually anything that's been kind of released yet. So, Bill, can you give us a quick overview? What actually is Photosynth?
Sure. Well, Photosynth is a project that we're working on in Microsoft Live Labs.
Uh-huh.
And we're really just trying to push the envelope of what can we do with digital photography? How do we move beyond digital photography, just mimicking analog photography, the same thing we used to do with film?
Mm-hmm.
And so Photosynth is one of the things we're working on that's exploring those limits. So this was a pretty exciting opportunity that the producers of CSI New York came to Microsoft, saw the technology, and built up the plot of the episode around the technology.
Well, Michael, did you watch the episode?
I did.
Can you just quickly give us an overview? How did they use the Photosynth technology in the episode? What did they actually do?
I believe it was a prom scene,
uh-huh.
and they took the photos from all the different cell phones that were taken in this party.
Okay.
And they imported them into Photosynth, and you could use the technology to see all the different angles and zoom into photos, and et cetera, to solve the case.
So the Photosynth technology took all those photos from various different cell cams and worked out relationships between the two. That's kind of what technology does.
Photosynth analyzes a set of photos,
uh-huh.
that are all taken at a common location.
Right.
And finds what's common among all those photos, and then reconstructs a three-dimensional model of that environment and allows you to navigate among the photos within the three-dimensional model.
Okay.
So you want to see an area to the left, you can simply turn your view to the left, and the photo that represents that view to the left comes into play. You can move forward, you can move back, and move around in a three-dimensional space. Now, for this actual episode, of course, we had lots of actors standing on the set holding up cell phones, which then the detectives collected, and that was the basis of their crime investigation. In actuality, what happened is the camera staff for the show took all those pictures. But they actually took them all on the set with all the actors present. They took several hundred photos, and then we used the Photosynth software to analyze those photos and build that three-dimensional model. And then in the lab, when they were analyzing that, the actors were actually operating the Photosynth technology preview software, that we have available on our website to explore that collection. And unlike a lot of the times in these shows where what's up on the screen is just has been created by the art department and the actors are pretending they're typing or pretending they're manipulating.
I love when they talk like this.
Yeah.
I don't know who does that.
In several of those shots, the actors were actually directly manipulating the software. It was easy enough for them to navigate through and follow the script, look to the left, look to the right, move in that direction, that the actors actually drove the software and operated it.
More information on Photosynth. We can actually go and do a tech preview online. What's the website for that?
So right now, Photosynth is an experiment inside of Microsoft,
okay.
and we're sharing the results of that experiment in the form of a technology preview.
Okay.
And that's at labs.live.com/Photosynth. And you can go there and explore many different photo collections and really duplicate the exact type of actions the actors on the show were doing to manipulate those photos in 3D.
We can solve crimes too.
I was going to say, and for a sneak peek of perhaps maybe how the CSI of the future will be potentially using digital imagery to, you know, solve crimes. We can go to cbs.com/CSI.
I think if you just go to cbs.com, you can find where they stream all their shows. And it's CSI New York is the show.
All right, great. I'll find the link and I'll put it up on the Channel 10 website. Great. Okay, so the next topic for discussion is, Jeff, you were telling us before about this competition that's being run around the top 100 most iconic photography locations around the world.
Yes, that's true. Microsoft is sponsoring, along with Canon, a photography feature that's being run in Outdoor Photography Magazine and PC Photo Magazine.
Okay.
And it's a three-month feature, and it's called the Top 100 Iconic Photo Places in the World. Again, that's another mouthful. I think I've got that right. But it's a multifaceted feature that is... It does exactly what it says. It's featuring some of the most photographed and iconic places around the earth. And it is actually a contest as well, where readers can come in and submit their photos of these different places. They have a very generous contest. And most of it's reader viewer's choice, as it were.
Right.
In addition to that, they have a website that is interactive using Microsoft's Virtual Earth technology.
Okay.
Where you can actually go around and check the different sites. Based on, you know, their popularity.
And is the competition to find the top 100, or is it here are the top 100, go out and shoot the best photo for us?
I think it's about, you know, I'm not really sure of that. I think if there's a site that perhaps the editors didn't include, then that they might have forgotten, perhaps it would have gotten included. But right now, I think those sites have been somewhat defined.
Okay.
And a lot of that is also, I think, suggested by the readership themselves. But for the most part, they'll have some established pros that have, you know, will ring in on what they think are iconic and what makes them good spots. The readers themselves are, you know, contribute images in the contest. And I think when it all comes together, you put it all together, you get a pretty good idea of the top 100 photo places on the planet.
Cool. Any tips, guys, for trying to take photos of the top 100? You know, photo destinations in the world. Bill, have you been hanging out in any planes recently?
I love that we do challenges like this and work with the magazines, because it really, you know, creates that motivation to go out there and shoot some photos and do some stuff. And the results, I'm just always stunned by the results. You know, people that are just out there everywhere can take such fabulous photos. And, you know, I think there's a certain knack for it, and it's having an eye. It's really looking at what you're taking a photo of. But there's no better way to develop that and get better than just by taking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photos.
Of which, you know, is really easy to do with a digital camera. Yeah. Obviously, you're not going to run out of film. Yeah. I mean, you might have to, you know, replace an SD card every now and then, but pretty much take all you want.
I always have loved the adage, what's the difference between an amateur photographer and a professional photographer? An amateur will show you all their pictures.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I definitely fall into the amateur category.
We used to have a saying in the workshops I taught. George Lepp used to say this all the time, that the difference between an amateur photographer and a professional photographer is the size of their trash can.
Oh, wow.
Because a pro will get rid of most of what he shoots, and amateurs fall in love with every single frame.
Yep, I also would be an amateur in that particular example as well. Michael, some of the photos you've shown us before are lots of wildlife photography, that kind of stuff. Could you actually enter this top 100, photos of the world with a point and shoot camera? Do you need to be going onto, you know, something a little bit bigger, a little bit more professional, or is it all about, you know, just finding that having a good eye and kind of framing the photo right?
I think the best photos that I've seen, you know, and recall, are really the composition is the first thing, and the subject matter, and the mood of the photo, are the things that stick out to you first.
Okay.
The quality of the photo, the high quality like tweaks and Photoshop files, like that's all great and good for professional people. But I think, yeah, totally, someone could take a decent quality point and shoot camera and probably take some very great photos. I'm not too familiar with the contest, but I would think so.
And Jeff, where can we go for more information on the competition? Is there a website?
Yes, so pcphotomag.com/top100 will get you all the details, both on the gallery and the contest.
Great, and you've got a blog post too up on the Pro Photography blog. What's the address for that?
The Microsoft Pro Photography blog is www.microsoft.com/prophoto. That takes you to our site, and there's a link to our blog right on the homepage.
And I saw recently a new piece of software that was released called the Microsoft Pro Photo Tools with Geotagging, and that's just kind of come out very recently. Now, the pro photo bit indicates to me that perhaps it's a set of tools for professional photographers. But Jeff, is there any application for this for enthusiasts? So maybe perhaps, can you tell us what the piece of software is and how can photography enthusiasts use it?
Yeah, I think first of all we should mention that although we call it pro photo tools, it's not exclusively for professional photographers.
Okay.
Advanced amateurs, even amateurs, it's fairly simple to use and it's quite handy. I should also mention that it's going to be an overall application that we're continually adding more and more features to. We have just recently released it with geotagging features, which is really, really hot right now. A lot of people asking for it. And it's a lot of fun. You just take one of these little devices. This is a photo tracker. I believe Sony also makes one. And the basic idea in simplest terms is you carry one of these devices around as you're taking photos. The devices record the GPS location, longitude and latitude, okay. and the time. Of course, your camera, your digital camera, is recording the images and the time, and the software will actually blend these together. So you can actually import the GPS data, import your images, and the ProPhoto tools will basically use the timestamp on both to coordinate them. What's also nice, if it's off a little bit, if you forget to set your camera, you have the ability to go in there and edit the image and move the locations around, so it's not like it's cast in stone. But it's a lot of fun to be able to post your images with GPS data so people can actually see exactly where you took your photos.
Okay. So, Bill, I know you've got a little GPS device here. So GPS stands for Global Positioning Satellite, and literally it just tracks you on the globe with a longitude and latitude and tells you exactly where you are, roughly where you are. How does it work?
Actually, very precisely where you are.
Really?
This ProPhoto tool, I just have to say, is the coolest piece of software okay. I've played with in quite a while. Maybe photosynthesize.
But yeah, I was about to say
photo.
But no, it's just, I mean, the ability to take every photo you shoot and know exactly where you were when you took it is just crazy cool. Now, you've been able to do that for quite some time, but it typically involved a fairly difficult process of how you did that and how you merged it. And with, you know, these new GPS receivers that are available, fairly inexpensive, you just plug them into the USB port, download the data, hand all this stuff to the ProPhoto tool, and all that information is merged with the photos. And then it's real easy to take those photos and look at them in a map view and see mm-hmm. exactly where they are on a map. We mentioned last time, I like to do aerial photography.
Yeah.
And so where you actually are is not quite as specific as pointing to a place on the map, but the GPS data is perfectly accurate. And it's really amazing for me to go look at a photo I shot up in the Olympic Mountains. And, you know, it's a gorgeous mountain, but I'm not quite sure which mountain that is or which angle I'm looking at it from. And now with this ProPhoto tool, it's just a snap. I come up and with the exact location the plane was at, overlaid the map, and now I know exactly what peak that was I was looking at, which angle I was looking at that on. It's really cool stuff.
Cool. Now, Michael, what are some of the things you can do with the GPS data? So I've taken a photo, I've added the GPS coordinates, so I know where it was taken, but that really looks like just a big bunch of numbers. Mm-hmm. Can I use like anything like, you know, Virtual Earth to actually then see exactly where that is?
Yeah, I was going to comment. On our team blog last week, or a couple weeks ago, we actually blogged about how taking photos that you have geotagged uh-huh. and placing them on a live search map and building an animated tour of your like cross-country, a road trip or whatever, your vacation. There's some really cool, interesting ways that you can share photos with people that may be bits and bytes of data from a device, but actually turns into like a really interactive map. And so, live search maps actually allows you to do that.
And I suppose the beauty of GPS, too, is that if it is a satellite, it literally is probably, is it anywhere on the globe? Are there places where, like, if you're on a cruise in the middle of the ocean, will the GPS still work and tell you exactly where you were in that big piece of water?
Yeah, I think spelunkers are probably out of luck.
Okay.
You kind of need a clear view.
That's cave.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah, but you need a clear view of the sky. But yeah, other than that, it is the global positioning system. Yeah. So, and then the other thing, and Jeff helped me out here, but the ProPhoto tool also lets me convert very easily between those numbers, which is a GPS location, and a descriptive location.
Yeah, you can use real names and real locations, so you don't have to worry about these big, long decimal numbers and everything. You actually just type in the actual name, it'll put it in there. It's really, really a fantastic application. We're really quite proud of it.
Okay, and is there a website to go to actually download the tool? Where can I get more information?
Yeah, if you go to the Microsoft ProPhoto site, again, that's at microsoft.com/ProPhoto. Again, there's a download section. It's the featured article this month. If in the future you go there, you go to our download site and we have all of our ProPhoto tools there.
Great. We'll put the URL up on Channel 10 as well. And just very quickly, Bill, you mentioned before that these GPS little units here are quite inexpensive. roughly, any idea what you can pick them up for on, you know, on the web, or if you go to a Photoshop, are they going to be a couple $100? Are they less a little bit more than that?
Less than that, you know, 100, 150. I don't know about the new one you've
got. This one is a photo tracker, and it was about $99.
Yeah. And do you need a subscription to the satellite or anything?
No, that's a cool thing about it. This is on right now. It's not tracking us because we're indoors, but as soon as I walk outside, it'll find out where I am, and if I take some pictures, it'll be happy to show me where I'm at.
Great. All right. Well, we will go and check out the Pro Photo tools with geotagging, and I'll put the website up on Channel 10.
Terrific.
Great. Okay, welcome back to Shutter Speed, Episode 2. Now, in Episode 1, we talked about the basics of taking digital photos. We talked about some of the fundamentals, tips and tricks to how to take better photos. So we now have our camera full of great shots. We want to actually get them off the camera onto the PC. So the guys are here, and we're going to talk about that process. So first of all, guys, here's my camera. It's full of photos. I need to get them onto the PC. Now, Michael, I could just pull out the storage card and actually plug it into my PC, but let's talk about what's really the best way to do that, and what are some of the things that we can do to make sure that we're actually, you know, keeping the photos in the best order.
Most of the cameras are USB enabled. In fact, all of them today are. So all the PC with a USB cable, just plug it in and your PC will detect the camera or the device. There's also card readers, so if you have an SD card or a compact flash card, so you can plug that in and plug your card into the card reader and transfer the files from the card to the PC.
And most cameras will come with the correct cable, or at least hopefully the store person will tell you what you actually need to be able to get that stuff on.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. So I don't do it the right way. I'm pretty sure when I take the photos off my camera, I pull out the card, I plug it in, and I just copy them files into Explorer. But there are some actually smarter things you can do. I know with Windows Live Photo Gallery allows you to add things like metadata. Let's have a look at doing that. But firstly, quickly, I want to touch on this word, this metadata. Or metadata or metadata or whatever you want to call it. Bill, what is metadata?
Well, metadata is basically any information that's associated with a photo other than the picture itself.
Okay.
So it can be there's multiple types of metadata. So there's metadata that's automatically generated. Your camera knows what time and date you took the photo. It knows what the shutter speed was and what the lens aperture was. And all of that information is recorded in the file along with the picture itself. But other metadata could be information that you add to the photo, a description, a location, the GPS tags we talked about earlier in the episode that specify the exact location are all examples of metadata.
So metadata is essentially additional information that is not the picture itself, but we store it with the file. Cool. All right. So, Michael, let's look at, here's my camera. How do I get the photos onto the PC? What are some of the things I can do with Windows Live Photo Gallery as one example of doing that?
Sure. Yeah. So we actually use the metadata as part of the import process.
Okay.
So Bill has a camera here with some photos. Go ahead and plug that in with our USB cable.
We'll just pop it right in there.
And I already have Windows Live Photo Gallery installed. So what we'll see on the screen here is the auto import wizard is what we call it.
Now, one of the reasons we're going to use Windows Live Photo Gallery is specifically because it's actually a free download, right? You don't have to pay anything for
this.
Free
is always nice.
So that's always good, right? You know, I know there are some beautiful, you know, more professional tools like Photoshop and Lightroom, but, you know, let's face it, they're actually expensive. And if you haven't gotten around to investing in that software yet, this is at least a good free alternative. So, and it's get.live.com, is that
it
correct?
It is, or photogallery.live.com as well.
Okay, great. So, all right, we've got it installed. Bill's plugged in the camera, and we can see here, popping up on the screen...
You can see here that we recognize that it's a Canon PowerShot G9. These are the default import options, but we're actually going to choose Windows Live Photo Gallery because we want to see some of the things light up when the application is installed. So it's just read all the photos on the camera, and you get a couple options here, but I do want to review and organize the photos that he has on his camera. And this is one thing that that Photo Gallery really shines with is... You know, you talked about earlier importing files, you just plug it in the camera and just drag it and dropping. Well, maybe you don't want to drag and drop all of them and you have to go like browse for them. We actually very automagically group them all together.
Automagically?
Automagically, okay. It's trademarked as well.
Sure. Michael
Palmady. So, essentially, we're just running a check on the date taken of all of the photos, and we're grouping them based on chunks of time. So
I suppose the assumption is that you know, all the photos from a particular date are probably going to be of the same thing, or at least related in some way.
Yeah, and what we found is that a lot of people, they take photos, and unlike myself, you know, I run home and quickly transfer them all. I don't like to leave photos on my camera or my card. But you know, the reality is a lot of people do take photos all the time. They could go weeks or months, and they end up getting a lot of photos accumulated on their device.
I'm one of those people. Yeah. I have about 3 years worth of photos on my SD cards.
So what we see here is that we've grouped them based on time, and here are some photos, and you can actually look at them before you even import them. So these are some photos that looks like Bill took of
I
the set.
I just shot here in the studio today. Yeah.
So we were setting up for the shoot here, but I can look at the other photos as well. This is your dog, is that right?
That's our new puppy, Lucy.
Very cool.
How much do you want him to look at these?
This should be terrible.
Is it L-U-C-Y?
That's right.
Okay, I'm going to say channel 10, set. And the cool thing is I can give these names, and these names become folders. So when we import the files, we keep them organized based on the folder that, or the name that you give them here.
That's great, because a lot of the times when you are just copying the photos from the memory card directly to your PC, it's going to have a weird name like DSC-00001-44 something. So this is a really cool way to actually give it a name without having to manually go through it a second time.
So after I've named the folders for each of these files, I'm going to tag them as well. And that will help you, before you've even looked at the photos, you've essentially already organized them. We are using the metadata to organize them by date, so you've got them organized down by folder and by tag eventually.
So this is an example of metadata, additional data that's not part of the photo, but it's helping you actually organize and understand those shots. So what does this actually mean? So you've typed in like puppy for Lucy, so that's a word, but that word now somehow gets associated with the photo.
Yeah, so it actually, we do write that information back to the file, so okay. It will become part of the file after it is imported.
But you don't see the word like actually on the photo, no. It's kind of in the back.
Right.
Okay, cool.
So the nice thing too is I'm gonna uncheck some of these, because you know, we have a lot of photos on this camera and we don't have 5 minutes here to import all everything here. So I'm only gonna import the photos we took today and then the puppy photos.
Okay, great.
So go ahead and import. And we give you a quick preview as you're importing as well.
All right, great. So we've just imported those photos. Now, we imported two lots of photos from two date ranges. The first was the photos we took here setting up for the shoot today for Channel 10. You call that Channel 10 set. So on the left-hand side of the screen there, I can actually see Channel 10 set. And you've selected that. So now all that we're seeing is just those photos. And then the Lucy, the two photos of the puppy, they're also there as well. Now, the photos still do have the kind of, if you look on the right hand side, that kind of non-descriptive name. But what you have done is that you added these tags. So if we look back to the Channel 10 set, you can see on the right here, you've added two tags. Now, shoot and show, how do you add more tags? And should I be adding lots and lots of tags? What should I be doing with that?
It's really like, everyone kind of has their own little way of organization. I generally like to tag things by place, because I tend to remember where I took a photo. So I might actually put here, Redmond, because we're in Redmond, Washington.
Right.
And so now these photos have been tagged, or this photo, I only have one selected here, but that one is now selected as Redmond. So later on, assuming that I've taken many photos in Redmond, if I now expand what we call the tag tree to the tag node, and I choose Redmond, I can now sort or pivot my collection based on the tag that I've given the photo. And the same with any of these. So we imported some photos of Lucy, and so here's all the photos that I've tagged as puppy.
As puppy.
As part of the import wizard.
Okay, great. Now, Bill, you mentioned before when we were talking about what is metadata, and you're saying that metadata is this additional information, and it's not just tags to help you remember the photo. It can also be things like the actual settings on the camera when you took the shot. So we're looking at the properties here. This is all examples of metadata that's actually captured. Is that right?
Sure. Most every digital camera today follows standards, in this case a standard called EXIF, which captures all kinds of the technical information about how the photo was shot. So again, everything from the shutter speed and the aperture setting and which lens it was, if there was a flash used and flash modes, just a ton of information. And all of that information is stored in the file, and Windows Live Photo Gallery and the Windows Explorer let you explore that information, organize by that information, really take advantage of that. As more descriptive information to help organize and find the photos in your collection.
And Jeff, some of this information you can actually edit yourself too. I do remember actually in previous times when I've imported photos, there's been an opportunity for me to actually edit in photos taken before, let's say 5 or 10 years ago. I can actually go in and add the camera model if I know it and that kind of stuff. Do you do that with your photo collection?
Yeah, I sure do. I actually use tagging quite a bit, but all the other information I look at as well. And it's quite useful to determine, you know, how did I take the shot? For me, I like looking at it as if I use a flash, what aperture, lens, what have you. So as a virtual history of it. And just to kind of touch back on what we discussed earlier about the new Profoto tools, you can actually go in there and change it. If you need to change the time or the date because you've set your camera wrong, if you recorded it incorrectly, as well as geotagging, the Profoto tool actually allow you to change many of the different fields in there.
Okay, so that's great. So this metadata is just additional information that helps us understand more about the photo from a storage perspective, and then also working out, as you say, a history of actually how we took the shot and all the various settings.
And you can see here that the tags that I gave the photo have actually been written back to the file now.
Okay.
And that's something that Microsoft has really embraced, and we tend to call it truth is in the file. In many other applications, that truth or metadata is actually locked up in a proprietary database. Mm-hmm. And so if you decide in a year or two you're done using that application, you want to move to something else, you're kind of out of luck because the metadata and the time you've invested in an organization is really locked within that system. So the nice part about Windows Live Photo Gallery and other Microsoft apps is that the data is actually written back to the file when we manipulate it. And then we of course read metadata as well.
So. Which basically means that if you burn the file to a CD and give it to your friends or your parents or your family, that data is actually still on the image. You haven't lost it. All the metadata and information is all there. So that's really good. Okay, so we've got the photos on the camera. On the laptop now. Let's talk about some of the very simple, basic things that we want to do in terms of editing. Now, again, we're assuming here that the photographer, out there in Channel 10 land hasn't yet invested in some more kind of professional, more enthusiast-based software like Adobe Lightroom or Photoshop. So we're going to use just Windows Live Photo Gallery here. Now, one of the things that I see a lot in the photos that like my family take, and I take them as well, is a lot of red eye. Now, that's something that... What is red eye, first of all? Who wants to... Jeff, what's red eye?
Red eye is essentially when you take a photograph of a subject in a dark room and their eyes are extremely dilated. The flash from the camera will actually reflect on the retina, and that's why you see all the reflection. You're actually looking at the back of the eye itself.
Wow, so it has nothing to do with, demonic
evil,
position.
No. I mean, some kids might... But I don't want to say anything specific to these kids. But sometimes I leave the red eye in because it's appropriate.
But the bottom line is that in occasions where red eye is prevalent, you actually see like red dots.
Very
in the
much.
Eyes.
Yeah.
So that can be something we want to get rid of. You can do that quite easily in Windows Photo Gallery, Windows Live Photo Gallery.
You can. So we're looking at some very classy photos that you guys took earlier.
These are all professionally shot.
I'm not sure there's much this software can do for these at all.
All right. So this is.
You can't fix what got left out.
All right. So this is Jeff. Now, you've opened the photo up, and we can see there, can you just go full screen just to kind of see the extent of the red eye? There you go, you can see the...
By all means.
Now, how do we get... Whoa, wow, okay, now what do we do?
So, we can simply just fix the photo by going, click on the Fix button, and one of the options here is Fix Red Eye. And really, it's quite easy. You find, you see the two eyes here, and I'm just going to draw a rectangle around them.
Uh-huh.
And voila, it is fixed.
Wow, can you do that again?
I can. So we'll go ahead and undo that, and I'll back it up here so we don't have to stare into Jeff's eyes.
Or his nose.
So you can see, I don't have to be precise or anything. I'm just, drawing a rectangle just, around his eyes, and there you go.
That's pretty cool. So obviously the software works out where the two, equidistant points are that are red, and then gets rid of the red.
Yeah.
All right, that's great. Now, some other things you can do, I've noticed in Windows Live Photo Gallery, they're up the top here on the top right, there's this auto-adjust, and... I noticed that a lot of the time when I click that, it actually can make some of my photos look a lot better. Yeah. What does that do? Bill, what is the whole auto-adjust edit point or edit feature? What is it actually doing to the photo?
Well, when we take a photo, we do our best to expose that correctly and have the color balance correct so white's truly a white. And this even goes back to film days, but we're not perfect, and we never will be perfect. And so we can do a lot after the photo's been captured to adjust those colors, adjust the exposure, adjust the saturation, the depth of color, and the dynamic range. And that typically can be done with a whole bunch of knobs and dials and buttons. Back in the darkroom days, there were all types of techniques to control each of those attributes. But when you took your film down to the local store and they processed that, that machine that processed your film, even today especially, does all types of stuff to take your photo, no matter how poorly you may have taken it, and make the best possible photo it can make. All types of, again, sophisticated analysis of the picture to look at the range of the exposure. Even use techniques like face detection to find where a face is and use that to control exposure or color balance are all examples of things where software can do the job of correcting a photo and to improve it. And so in Windows Live Photo Gallery, you basically have both options available. You have all the knobs and dials and controls, and we also have an auto button. And the great thing about the auto button here is you can see it adjust the knobs and dials and controls. So not only can it help fix your photo, you can learn from what it does, see the changes it made, help you understand it, and then if they're not quite what you want, for a creative reason or another reason, you can tweak or adjust what it automatically decides will improve the quality of the photo.
All right, Michael, so you've got a photo here. Now, this is, that looks like flowers in the kind of reflection of a puddle of water. Is that right?
Yeah, this is up up north, about an hour north of Washington or Seattle, and there's an annual tulip festival in Skagit Valley. And, you know, there's rows and rows and rows, acres, hundreds of acres of tulips. And this is an example of what I was talking about earlier of composing a photo. Uh-huh. You know, everyone gets the wide angle of the field. And here I was like, you know, this is interesting. Like, you know, I've got, it's a relatively clear day. And there's, a pool of water between the troughs there. And I got a clear shot of the tulips. And so here they are. You're actually looking at a reflection. The tulips are on, you know, a few feet away outside of the frame. And it looks a little, the contrast is a little off. And you can see here we've got a histogram of the spectrum of from white to black. But I don't, you know, as a user, as a maybe a newcomer to photography, I might not understand all of the dials here. So that's what I've shown here with the auto adjust here. I'm just going to one click, and my photo does look visually better. The contrast, the flowers seem to pop a little bit more. I don't know if you guys have anything else.
So let's just undo that again, and just show us. So this is the photo as it came out of your camera.
It is.
Now, you're going to click auto adjust, and let's just watch what happens to the knobs and dials. Okay, so the brightness was increased there kind of to the right a bit. You can see this histogram thing here obviously changed. Mm-hmm. Can we just talk very quickly, what did it do? Did it kind of just make the entire thing brighter? Did it actually adjust the colors of the photo? What actually did the software do then?
It adjusted the brightness, it bumped that up a little bit, it cooled the photo off, and then it also moved the black point on the histogram slightly over and made the photo a little bit more contrasty.
You know, Jeff, what would you be doing in this case here, just with the very simple tools we have in Windows Live Photo Gallery, just to make the photo a little bit, you know, more exciting? What would you do? Would you adjust the color somewhat, or how would you actually edit this?
Well, I think I would take what the auto adjust did and maybe move it a little bit, take it another step further. I'd like to see a little more contrast and a little more pop in the colors. So I would probably take the black point slider, I'd actually move that histogram slider over a little bit just to give it a little bit more deeper blacks and a little bit more whites. And I'd probably even go down to the color panel and then boost the saturation a little bit. I mean, they're flowers, so you can actually do that a little bit.
Okay, wow. So now you've taken the auto adjust and then you've just boosted, you know, some of the, you took what the auto adjust did and then you accentuated it some
I took that
more.
As a cue and actually, you know, then applied my own artistic vision to it, as it were.
Okay, and you can actually undo and go back to the original photo, right?
You can, so there's a history of all the changes we've made.
Okay.
And we can absolutely undo. If I went back to the photo gallery, we're going to save this version.
Okay.
But we also took a original copy of the unedited version.
Okay.
And so at any point in time, a year from now, I can come back and you know, ask myself, what was I thinking, or what was Jeff thinking?
Yeah, there you go. I'm not going to ask him again.
And I can always revert back to the original. And within a click or two, I am right back to where I started.
Okay, wow. So you've always kept that original file if you do want to go back to it, but you can make all these auto-adjusted features.
Right.
Okay, now, another really simple thing you can do when you're editing photos is cropping them, changing the shape of the photo, which then kind of changes the alignment. Bill, you know, what are some simple things you can do with this cropping tool? Are there some rules that you should apply to photography to kind of make a photo look better by cropping it?
Well, there's all kinds of standard rules. It's really one of the most powerful creative tools. Unfortunately, it's also the most common mistake we make. When we look through the viewfinder, we just tunnel vision in on the exact center of the frame. And if you look through, anyone looks through their own photos, especially early photos you may have taken as you were learning photography or stuff you may take today, we always take pictures of people and their faces right in the center of the frame. And there's lots of sky or lots of ceiling up above them, which is totally useless. We don't need that. So one of the easiest things to do to improve the quality of a photo through cropping is find those cases. Find where you put that face right in the middle and you have all this wasted space above. Crop it out. Change the framing of that. And then the other powerful rule, which you can apply in a lot of different cases, is what's known as the rule of thirds. And if you think about taking a photo and splitting it up like a tic-tac-toe board, so 9 squares, 3 rows of 3, and then think of the intersection points of each of those rows. There's 4 different points where that grid intersects. And take the most interesting part of the photo, whether it's the middle of someone's face or in the photo we're looking at here, the sign maybe is what draws our attention, and put it on the intersection of those lines. Don't put it in the center of the frame. Put it on one of those 4 intersections, a little bit off the center of the frame. Invariably, you'll find one of those options of composition will create a more pleasing look of the photo. You can apply that rule of thirds when you shoot the photo, but with a cropping capability, it's easy to make an adjustment and fix that after the fact. In this case, Michael did a great job in the original photo and actually following the rule of thirds here. But with cropping, we could emphasize that no trespassing sign and de-emphasize the huge field of flowers some more in a lot of different ways. And that emphasis could include more of that the green stems below the flowers or more of the blue sky above, depending on what feeling he was looking for, a closed-in feeling of the immediate foreground objects or a more open feeling of lots more sky in the shot.
So, Jeff, the three things we just looked at there in terms of some of the simple techniques and simple things you can do to make a photo look better. So we looked at red eye, we looked at this auto adjust, the auto adjust in Windows Live Photo Gallery and sometimes accentuating that a little bit more. And then we looked at cropping. Are there any other really simple basic editing, little tips and tricks that people can do when they're importing their photos? Or are they really the three main ones? We're just kind of looking at auto correction, looking at the red eye reduction, and looking at perhaps cropping a photo.
I think those are the primary, especially for somebody who's first starting out. Obviously, as you move on from perhaps this application to other photo editing applications, there's obviously the sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I'm a big Photoshop guy, and I use this application all the time when I'm working on stuff, when I just want to quickly edit, crop, fix the tonal values and the colors, and just like that, I'm done. I really, really like it.
Great. All right, so to download Windows Live Photo Gallery, we did mention it before. It is a free tool, which is one of the reasons why we're using it right here. And the URLs are?
Photogallery.live.com.
Okay.
But it's also part of the Windows Live suite, a whole suite of applications that are all free, and you can get all of those at git.live.com.
All right, great. And I think we'll go back to Windows Live Photo Gallery in some future episodes of Shutterspeed, because there's some really cool things you can do about auto-publishing to Flickr and Windows Live Photo Gallery and all that kind of stuff.
Panoramic stitching. Lots of cool stuff.
We'll definitely look at that in future episodes. I just wanted to quickly go back. Bill, before we started rolling the cameras, you were talking about metadata and the history of metadata. Actually, it's not a new concept. You were saying that metadata really has been around for a very long time, and you have an example.
Sure. Well, I mean, I remember back when I was a kid growing up, and my mom was the photo organizer in the family. And so when the prints would come back from the photos, she'd sit there and carefully write on the back of every print the date, who was in the photo, what was the event.
Now, that's metadata.
That's metadata.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's information about the photo that's part of the photo that isn't the picture itself.
Yeah.
And I always, as a little kid, I always thought, oh, how crazy it's taking all the time to do that. And now as I dig back through shoeboxes of photos of my early photos that I didn't do that, I so wish I had invested in metadata. The same is true with photos we take digitally today. The power we have today is that we can do it so much more easily using the computer to help, and then we can do so much more with it. But I did find this photo. So here's a photo I took. This is actually, as best as I can recall, the first picture I ever took as a little kid.
Wow. Yeah.
It's my little sister and our dog in our backyard, terrible composition. Mm-hmm. I put them right in the center of the frame.
Now, you're still in the rule of thirds.
I hadn't learned all that yet. But absolutely no metadata, no information. Fortunately, the photo store that printed it helped me out. And right here down on the side is the date, and I won't even show you how old that is. July 1962, and
wow.
So from that little bit of metadata, I now learned a whole lot more about this photo. How old my sister was, how old I was when I took the first time I ever had my own camera and took photos. It's so valuable to spend the time, put some metadata on your photos. You may not need it tomorrow when you look at those photos, but 10 years from now, you'll be really happy you made that investment.
That's great. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for being on episode 2 of ShutterSpeed. We will see you again in future episodes, and all the links for the pieces of software and the things that we mentioned throughout the show, I'll put up on Channel 10. And thanks for your time. We'll see you again.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Not sure where the SD card goes on this one, but thanks for joining us for the episode number 2 of ShutterSpeed. For all the information on the software and the websites that we mentioned in the show, go to on10.net. If you'd like to contact us, shutterspeed@on10.net. Spell it any way you want. It'll work. We'll see you on another episode. Thanks very much.